Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Great show for you guys today. We got a fun little draft gimmick that we're going to roll out today. As we get closer to the draft, I think it's important to up the silliness, not crank it down, because this is the end of silly season and we have to celebrate in the only fashion that I see fit. Here to help me with this fun little exercise that we're going to do are two of my old friends, two of my good old buddies from The Ringer. First of all, it's Danny Kelly. DK, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It is very good to see you. Very good for you to be here. I was on Hawk Blocker Morning this week.
Oh, yeah.
With Brian Newman. And he, as always, those folks in the Pacific Northwest, big fans of you. So he was asking what it was like to work with you back in the day. And I said it was predictably wonderful, as I think everyone who's worked with DK tends to say.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot. Appreciate it.
On the other end of the spectrum, it's my good buddy Ben Sol. It's my good buddy Ben Solak. Ben, how you doing, man?
Great. I think I know like three total people in the Pacific Northwest, DK being one of them. So I'm infringing very slowly on DK's geographical fan base. It's a slow burn.
So here's what we're going to do today. And let me see if I can swiftly explain this. We're going to do a little draft. We're going to go from 1 to 30, picking players that are eligible to be drafted this season. The goal is for your team to have the combined lowest draft slots. So just for example, DK, you have the number one pick based on a random list generator
we make all hosts into Danny Heifetz. We bring mispronunciation us.
Hey, absolutely not. Do not put that on me. I'm going to use real words from here on out. The random order generator that I used earlier this week, Dave, gave DK the number one pick. The number one pick, I presume, I'm not going to do this for you, Danny, is probably going to be Caleb Williams. That is the goal. You want to get the guys who are going to be drafted the highest on your team by the end of this. We're going to go in snake order. And what we decided is the two losers owe the winner dinner at some point when we are together over the next calendar year at some sort of NFL event. You guys have agreed to this. Tell the people that you've consented to this idea.
Well, we were talking, we were like, maybe that's our bet, but your bet is you have to keep the mustache for draft week because the mustache is looking great, but apparently you're shaving. It's a shame. What a shame.
Boo.
I really want to keep it because I've become very attached to it, but I just do not think it's the most professional presentation of myself.
As a wise man once said, up the silliness as we get closer to the NFL draft. an old adage from before time.
I like to think that the draft show that we're doing with Dane, you know what this is? It's my respect for Dane as a professional.
That makes sense.
I am sitting next to Dane with this sort of mustache while watching him cook over two straight nights. I feel guilty doing
all
that
right.
to him.
Let's,
I want this
fair.
To be a serious
all right,
operation.
Dinner it is.
All right. So DK, you're going to start us off. Ben, you have the second pick. I have the third and fourth picks. We're going to be going in snake order because it's really the only fair way to do this. So DK, why don't you kick us off? Who is the first pick of the draft?
Caleb Williams feels pretty locked in that he is going to be the number one overall pick for the Bears. So I'm going to take that one, hopefully, to the bank.
Ben, I'm going to keep bugging you about your draft charting for the quarterbacks that you've done recently. When you were charting Caleb Williams for The Ringer as part of the great draft content that you guys have been putting together, what was kind of your biggest takeaway that maybe was a little bit surprising when you actually dug into the entire body of work?
The thing was that he's really accurate when he's pressured, and that's both when he's got pressure in his lap, like it's in his face right now, and it's also when like he had to deal with pressure and then get outside of the pocket, and then there's bodies around him and guys are trying to stop him from scrambling. Like, he's just really very unflappable, and I think that his play style is going to invite pressure because he tends to, like, you know, throw from weird platforms and try to buy an extra second. Like, he just has to feel okay with dealing with NFL bodies and working those tight quarters, finding those bad arm angles. And he's not just like good at it. Some of his accuracy numbers when pressured are better than like regular quarterbacks when they are just regular, not pressured. Like, it's that sensational. And so if he's going to invite pressure, he better rise to the occasion of it. With the way that USC offensive line played and the way that scheme worked, he dealt with so much pressure and he was just electric under it. So it makes a ton of sense. The more I've watched him, Robert, the more I think, like, the Bears are going to a Super Bowl. Like, he's saving the Bears.
Don't. Please stop.
He's saving the Bears. Robert, yeah, he's throwing for 4,000 yards next season.
We're 5 minutes in. I'm already so pissed at you. The Danny Heifetz thing and the Bears winning a Super Bowl in a 5 minute stretch is completely unacceptable. Yes. I'm really upset. Just
the antagonist of the Athletic Football Show.
DK, you do a draft guide for the Ringer every single year. Dane and Nate at one point both had Drake May ahead of Caleb Williams. You have Caleb Williams number one among your quarterbacks. Was it ever close, or was it always pretty definitive that he was the top guy for you?
I mean, I certainly considered it, but I just keep coming back to the special traits that Caleb Williams has, just his arm talent, his ability to control the football on so many different types of throws. Like, he can throw off platform and he's so creative. He always knows where everyone is on the board, kind of deal. Like, he to me, he just has the special traits that you just do not see come around very often. And so, to me, it was always just chasing the upside, I guess, that he comes with. I can understand certainly why a lot of people like Drake May and, you know, just the way that he operates, the things that he does before the snap, the size, the arm, everything. But to me, Caleb Williams is just, his traits are special.
All right. Number one was easy. So, like, number two, I think maybe a little bit more difficult if you're trying to get the best value here. This isn't who you think should go number two. This is who you think will go number two. So where did you land?
And not even that, also, it's like the guy who I think will go two, and if he doesn't go two, will go early enough, like go three or go four. And so I'm taking Jaden Daniels for that reason. I do think that Daniels will be the pick for the Commanders at two. There's been like a little bit of a backswing on that recently, but he's still a favorite to go there. He's a huge favorite to be a top five pick. And I do think if he makes it past two, I could see the Patriots being really interested in that sort of game breaking potential at three. And so I'm really confident that Jaden's going top five, more so than I am with the following quarterback. So he's the pick. Jaden Daniels for me is the first guy on my board.
All right, so I'm going to go Drake May at three. Why are you not as confident that Drake May is going to go in the top three? Even if New England passes, you don't think somebody is going to snap him up before we get out of the top four?
Oh, no, I do. I absolutely, that's what I expect. I do think we're going to get like four quarterbacks in the top five, top six, maybe even one, two, three, four, which has never happened before. But if you tell me right now, like, hey, one quarterback kind of falls a little bit, gets picked at seven, gets picked at eight, who is it? I would bet a lot more on it being one of May or McCarthy than I would bet on it being Daniels. Like, I just think Daniels' floor, in terms of if there is a faller, I think his floor is way better. So for the purposes of this draft, I prefer him over Daniels, or I prefer him over McCarthy and May.
But that's not personally how you have the quarterback stacked up. You think that Daniels is not the sort of proposition that maybe he's being painted to be by other people.
Yeah, and Daniels, he's so tough, man. I don't think anybody's pre-draft read on Jaden Daniels is going to be right. Like, his range of outcomes are just, they're so, not only are his range of outcomes so wild, but there's also so many ways where, like, his career starts amazing and then tanks and then starts bad and ends amazing. Like, he's just gonna, even when he gets to the league and he's older, he should be developed. No, like, there's still so much more he can grow into. Like, he's up and he's down and he's this way and he's that way. Like, at any point, 50% of the people are going to look like geniuses on Jaden Daniels, and 50% are going to look like idiots, and then it's going to change a month later. Like, he's just that mercurial. And so, for me, like, the ups and the downs, I understand why you're buying it top five, top 10, you're talking yourself into the ceiling, but I would only be doing that if there wasn't a Drake May in this class, and there is a Drake May in this class, and young man can play a little ball, right? And he's got some range of outcomes to him, right? He's got some variance, but he's a lot more ups than he is downs. And I can see the ceiling a lot closer on the horizon than I can with Daniels. And so for me personally, I'd be taking Drake at two, and I'd be feeling great about it. But that's why they don't pay me the big bucks to be the GM of the Commanders and invite everybody to Topgolf.
Adam Peters is a wonderfully dressed man with a quarter full, with a closet full of really nice looking quarter zips. So he is very fit for the role. All right. I'm picking at three. I'm going with Drake May just because I don't see him getting out of the top four at the very least. And I think that someone would probably come up to three and take him. It's hard for me to imagine a world where quarterbacks don't go one, two, three. I don't know who the quarterbacks exactly will be, which teams will be making those picks if the Patriots end up trading out. But if New England does pass on a quarterback at that spot, I think someone else will take one. So I'm going to go with May at three. I'm also picking at four. And this to me is a harder decision to make, because we've talked so much about quarterbacks going one, two, three, four. You just alluded to it, Ben. And it seems like J.J. McCarthy would be that fourth quarterback if it was going to fall that way. But I'm still going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. here, because it's hard for me to see him getting out of the top five it's easier for me to see J.J. McCarthy getting out of the top five than it is Marvin Harrison, even if J.J. McCarthy might be a better bet to be the fourth overall pick, if that makes sense. So I think that Marvin Harrison Jr. to me is just the 230-yard drive in the fairway with this pick, and that's why I'm going with it.
That's what I would have done, too. I think it's looking more and more likely Arizona sticks and picks at four and just takes Harrison. Try not to get too cute about it. And even if they do trade back, they could trade back up again, or trade back and then trade back up and try and grab him. So I like that.
I was really excited when I got the second overall pick because I was really looking forward to getting Marvin. And I was just like, all right, like it'll go quarterbacks and then I'll get Marvin. So I think like that's the right pick at four. That's the pick I would have made at that spot for sure. I'll take McCarthy at five very happily, right? Because I think I'm getting a top seven, top eight pick with the ceiling to go two, with the ceiling to go three. And so like it's still like this is a quarterback who now I think, you know, 2 months ago, it was like, man, McCarthy might go top 20, crazy. And now we're all like, yeah, he's there at six. They got to grab him, right? And his over-under is set at 5.5. So I'm very happy to get him. I'm so very confident he goes high. And when it's quarterbacks like this, like I have the potential to get like the second and third overall pick as my first two picks. Nice.
I'm wondering how realistic it is for somebody to come up to four. If the Giants want him and they say, we need to come out of this top 10 with a quarterback and McCarthy ends up being that guy, do they risk waiting? Do the Vikings say we have to go up and get him? So is his floor like the fifth or sixth overall pick, even though you think that he's probably going in the top 10? So I think that's the biggest question with McCarthy is where the floor actually exists. But with Harrison, I think even if the ceiling isn't as high as McCarthy in the top three, I still feel like he's probably not getting out of the top five.
The Vikings' difficulty of getting to four right now is one of the most interesting things to me in this draft because they just don't know enough about the Commanders at two and the Patriots at three to like really feel like they can commit to trading up right now. But every day that goes by, it's going to get a little bit harder to go get to four in front of the Giants. And if the Giants feel like they know enough, or the Giants feel like they just love the quarterback class enough, they can make the move to four right now and just blank the Vikings out if the Patriots aren't moving. And so like there's a staring contest right now is like who's going to move to four early enough before the other teams with enough confidence that the guy they want will be there. It's challenging, man. 7 days out.
Yeah, and we just don't know who likes which quarterback, and that's kind of preventing teams from making those sorts of moves as we are again sitting a week out, is because Washington does feel like a really big pivot point. DK, you're at six now, so we got Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Marvin Harrison Jr., JJ McCarthy all off the board. What do you think?
This is a tough. I do two in a row, correct? So this is, I feel like this is a very tough spot. I'm going to go with Malik Nabers for my first pick. And it's just because for a number of reasons, I think he's probably going to be a top 7-8 pick. Most likely there's some people that are saying teams have him as their number one receiver, the way that he's so explosive and the way that he can change an offense. I can see teams buy into that. Teams love speed. So I'm going to go with Malik Nabers at that spot. What do you think about that pick?
I think that makes sense. I would have picked him there as well. My question is, if the Giants end up taking a quarterback, what does that do for Malik Nabers' floor? Is the floor still 9, we think, with Chicago? Do we think some other team would maybe come up to 7 or 8 to get him? What would that team be? Do the Titans have any interest in doing that? Are the Titans dead set on taking the best offensive tackle available at 7 and don't want to move back and run the risk of losing out on that guy? What is Atlanta doing? So 7 and 8 are fascinating to me because if the wide receivers fall a certain way, it feels like a team that wants to get aggressive and come away with one of those pass catchers, that's a landing spot they might try to chase.
I tell you, if I'm Terry Fontenot at 8, right? And I remember Terry Fontenot's made 3 straight picks in the top 10. All right. Like he has had his fair share of top 10 picks. If I'm there at 8 and one of the top 3 receivers are left, I'm going into auctioneer mode, man.
I think that's exactly right.
Third and a first. I am jacking up that price. I'm telling somebody to get in front of Chicago. That's a huge boon for Atlanta. If one of the big 3 receivers falls to them, get out of that pick and make somebody pay a lot to come get it.
Because if you want to come away from this draft with a defensive player in your Atlanta, which I think makes all the sense in the world, you can feel pretty good. Let's hypothetically say it's Jacksonville at 17, somebody like that that wants to come up for one of the receivers. I think you would feel pretty solid about your ability to come out of the 17th pick with a corner, a pass rusher, some impact defensive player, because some of those guys are going to fall. So that's why I think the Nabers' floor is probably around 8 or 9, even if his ceiling is like 5 or 6.
And so then this is where it gets tough, because... So I've got Nabers, I've got Caleb, and then we start talking about who's going to be the first tackle off the board. I think there's some question marks as to who it's going to be. I think obviously a lot of teams like Joe Alt, a lot of teams like Olufoshanu, a lot of teams like JC Latham. I don't know if there's a very strong consensus on who the top tackle in this draft class is, other than people sort of just speculating. And that leads me to maybe make a stupid move here and go with Roma Dunze, who I think might not, I don't, like his floor to me is nine, or like his absolute, like the lowest he may fall is nine. And I think there's a chance we're getting it wrong with like who the top tackle is or who the top two tackles are or whatever. And so maybe this is a super risky move and it'll end up looking stupid, but I'm just going to go with the guy I think is going to almost lock for the top 10. And that's Roma Dunze. I don't know. What do you guys think of this?
I actually like that a lot. I think that makes a lot of sense because I think we know that the three receivers are probably going to go in that range. There's probably more of an eye of the beholder feel to the way the tackles are going to go. Ben, what do you think about that?
Joe Alt's over under is set at 7.5, and he's minus 400 to go under. Like, I hear you, like, that there's tackle uncertainty. I'm very happy to be getting Alt. I feel good about getting that.
I'm upset because he would have been my next pick. I had him one spot above Odunze in my little
board. Because here's the thing. Even let's say Alt's not the first tackle off the board, he's still going, right? Like, look at the Jets at 10. If the Jets are there at 10 and Joe Alt is falling to them, and the Jets are doing the Brock Bowers thing, I'm suspicious of that. Like, I think that there are enough teams that rank Alt highly enough that the Chargers surprise everybody, they take Fuaga at 5, Alt's still going. I think Alt's still going super high. He's that caliber of prospect. The thing that we have to remember about Joe Alt, this is like a high floor, high ceiling guy. He was a tight end 4 years ago, man. Like it always feels, oh, Notre Dame, like he's locked in. No, whatever. This is like, he just put on mass. He just put on weight. He is still ascending. And he's already this good. He's an exciting guy to get. So Joe Alt for me at 8. I would have taken Odunze if you took Alt, DK. I think that Odunze is a solid pick. And yeah, also expecting to be a top 10 guy. But Joe Alt here, even with tackle uncertainty, I'm very happy to be buying him and just hoping the Titans do the thing they're supposed to do.
So that was the 8th pick was Joe Alt for you there, Ben. So the 8 guys have gone so far. Caleb Williams, Jane Daniels, Drake May, Marvin Harrison Jr., JJ McCarthy, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, Roma Odunze. Those were my top 8 guys. Yeah. And I think this is
where it gets bad.
No. I think those were the solid top 8 guys, which is why I was very upset that I was picking at 9 and 10 here, because I think it's very possible and very easy to go awry with these picks. All right.
Good luck.
Yeah, this is tough.
My next pick at 9 is Dallas Turner. And it's for this reason. I think that in this range at 8 and 9, and this is assuming the teams stick and pick, the two teams picking at 8 and 9, I think you can make an argument that their biggest need is edge rusher with Atlanta and Chicago. And so if the receivers are all off the board, I still feel like edge rusher is more likely for the Bears than offensive line, just based on their current team construction and where they are. And I think Atlanta, that's the biggest need on their entire roster. So even if Atlanta were to trade down a little bit, you know, if a team wanted to come up for one of the receivers, it's still hard for me to imagine a world where Dallas Turner gets out of like the top 13 or 14 picks. All the other guys in this range, I think it's a little bit easier to imagine that. So that's why I feel most comfortable with Turner in this group, even if I feel like he's the best pick of a bad bunch as you get past the top 8.
I think that's who I probably would have gone with as well. I think teams are just going to look at his length, his size, his athletic measurables, like explosiveness, flexibility, all those things. And he's, I think, probably the least. I really like Leatu Latu, but the neck injury thing is scary. So like, to me, he's the top. Most likely edge rusher to go like the top guy in this class. So I probably would have picked that one too.
Ben, what do you think about that?
Turner's like 4 or 5 picks down on my board. Daniel Jeremiah was speaking on his conference call the other day, and he said, you know, there's no consensus on the top 3 edge rushers, like who goes where. Somebody asked him about the Falcons and Turner at 8 specifically, and he said, I would not put that in ink, right? Like, I think that there is a lot of uncertainty at edge. Start by the uncertainty at tackle. I think it's there at edge. I like buying into the tackle class more because I think those guys are going to go top 10, top 15. Like, I do mock drafts and all of a sudden Jared Verse is there at 24. All of a sudden Latu Latu is there at 22. All of a sudden Dallas Turner is there at 19. Like, there's ways that one of these 3 guys falls. And so I don't want to tip my hand too much, but I don't want to be buying edge rushers in this exercise because I feel really underconfident about who goes early and who goes a little bit later.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. My next pick is JC Latham. Just because if I'm looking at the tackles and talking to people, it just feels like there is a consideration of his upside that feels different than some of the other guys in this group. And so after Joe Alt, who I think has kind of become the consensus top tackle for a lot of people, I think there's a level of intrigue with the tools that Latham brings. Like, it would be easy for me to imagine him going to the Jets at 10, for example. And I think with some of these other guys, it may be a little bit harder for me to imagine that just because maybe they don't necessarily have
the bag of tools that Latham brings to the process. So those are my picks. I got Dallas Turner at 9, JC Latham at 10. I certainly don't feel good about that.
And I want to make it very clear, I'm upset. I'm very happy because the first player on my board after Joel when I last picked was Brock Bowers. And that's who I'm taking here with my fourth pick. Yeah,
I just couldn't do it. There's just too many different variables that scare me off.
Here's the thing. Don't take tight ends early. Because that's been like a big thing in NFL media draft talk over the last
NFL
month
media.
Or so.
Don't call Shield NFL media.
Well, Shield did, but a lot of people have done it, but also Shield, my co-host on the Mirror NFL show, a man who I deeply respect and love, but also is wrong about Brock Bowers. That's like a big conversation in our world. In the NFL world, man, they always talk themselves into the outliers. They always talk themselves into oh, it didn't work for them, but it will work for us. They are big believers in the Tobias Fünke phenomenon, right? And so with Bowers, yeah, there was a moment a month ago where it was like, oh, Bowers might fall, 18 to the Bengals. Where is he going to go? Eagles take him like crazy. And over the last couple of days, last week or so, we've seen a lot of the Titans are taking meetings with him. The Jets taking meetings with him. We're back in kind of the top 10, top 12 conversation. His over-under is set at 12.5, which is the lowest left on this board of the lines that I looked at. And I do think that is it the smartest pick? No, but I just need one. I just need one team who doesn't get the tackle they want. They don't get the receiver they want. And they go, Bowers is the best guy on our board. And they're the Chargers. They're the Titans. There's somebody that's not ready to compete. And they're let's just get the good ball player and go. So I'm happy to get Brock here with my fourth pick.
Yeah, if the Chargers go down to 11, I think that makes sense. And the Broncos at 12. I mean, the Broncos are such a blank slate. It would not be hard to imagine them taking Bowers at all. I had him at 11. I had him behind these other two guys just because I don't know, the way I envisioned it in my mind was just Dallas Turner going at 8 or 9 and JC Latham not slipping out of the top 10. And Bowers, I think, just a little bit more uncertainty for me, but I completely understand the thought process there. How do you feel about Bowers, DK?
Oh, I love him. I have very little doubt that he's going to be a good NFL player. As for how high he gets picked, I think the discussion is certainly valid. I don't know, man. Have you seen him play? this is what I keep coming back to. It's go watch him play. How could you not get excited about having that on your team? And the way that he could hit the ground running immediately.
He's such a schemed touch guy. The team that drafts him is doing so to get him the football. He's so good at yak and screens underneath. You don't draft Brock Bowers and go he'll fit with our receivers. No, you draft him to be we're going to focal the point this guy. We're going to centralize on this guy.
And that's what the Broncos feel that way. If they were to take him, I could see them kind of going that direction. What do you think the floor for Bowers is, Ben?
I do probably 18 to the Bengals, right? Like I said, I think he's going to go earlier than that. The line is set at 12.5. I do think that once we start getting to Seahawks at Colts at 15, Seahawks at 16, Bengals at 18, we're outside of blue chip territory. There's always 10 to 11 guys who are really locked first rounders, and it always starts to dissipate. Then you start getting to that late teen spot. There's gonna be a team sitting there that's just okay, we have a top 5 grade on this guy, and we don't have anybody else we like. Let's just take the good football player. So I do think a small fall is certainly possible, but I a big fall would surprise me.
The Colts is my favorite among all those teams, I think. The Bengals is a football thing, and just dropping him in with Ja'Marr Chase and with Joe Burrow, I like that because I think it's fun. In terms of offensive system, in terms of how he fits with the other pass catchers, where he'd fit in the hierarchy, I just love the idea of Shane Steichen having him in Indianapolis. And if you look at the types of guys they've had at receiver or at tight end, I think it makes total sense. There's nobody there blocking him. He fits very well into who they want to be on offense. So that's the one that I keep coming back to if he ends up getting to 15.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, DK, you are up with two at 12 and 13. Brock Bowers just went at 11.
So, man, again, this is a tough call. I think for my first one, I'll probably go Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback out of Toledo. spending too much time with Heifetz. I think this is tough because I feel pretty strongly that he's going to be the first corner taken, but there's also another guy that, of course...
Why do you feel strongly about that?
Because the size, speed, strength, versatility combo, the fact that he showed out at the Senior Bowl, I think Terrion Arnold probably had a grasp on the CB1 title until he tested and ran like a 4.5, and I think that might scare some teams a little bit. As stupid as that might be, like I still feel like teams do think about that kind of stuff. Like Quinyon Mitchell ran a 4.3, and he looked, you know, the Senior Bowl, this was not too big for him. He was the best player at the Senior Bowl, like every practice. And so I guess that's why I feel that way. I'm going with Quinyon Mitchell for my first pick. I guess, first off, what's your reaction to that?
I can understand that. He was two spots further down on my board. I think that if you look at that stretch of the draft, there are a lot of teams that need corners, right? I mean, the Raiders absolutely need a corner. The Colts were in the L'Jarius Sneed conversation. They could draft a corner if somebody like Bowers isn't there. So I can understand where a little run on corners happens here between like 13 and 17. The Jags are another team that desperately needs a corner. What do you think Mitchell's floor is, Ben?
Jags. If the Jags have a corner fall to them, either one of the top two guys. That feels like, I know, like, oh, they're doing their work in the wide receiver class, whatever. Like, Ryan Nielsen's the new DC there. They need press corners, they need guys who can play on the outside, and they just let Darius Williams go. Like, they got a big hole at corner two right now. I will say, like, I think the corner market also starts at 8. You talk about Atlanta, that trade back potential. There's edge rusher need, but there's also a substantial cornerback need. AJ Terrell's only there for one more year in terms of his deal, right? And obviously they want to get that done, but they have nobody behind him on the outside. And so this is, yeah, like, I could see corners going earlier than people expect, but it is a wide range for corners. That's the thing that scares me about both Quinyon and Terrion Arnold. Eight to 20, these guys are going. It's a big
range.
Don't
say that. All right.
Sorry, my bad.
My only, when you look at two teams specifically, the Raiders desperately need a corner. The Raiders also need offensive linemen. If there's an offensive lineman in that range they want, the Raiders need a guard. The Raiders need a tackle. So they have multiple needs at those spots. And I think some of the players available might align with that. And I don't know if the Colts necessarily need a corner or they wanted L'Jarius Sneed. Whether they wanted somebody that they thought was a clear upgrade over what they had, or they were just going to take the best corner available whenever they had a chance. I think there's a little murkiness there. So I think the floor for some of these guys is maybe a little bit lower than some of those initial mock drafts and even some of the stuff we see right now might lend you to believe.
Yeah, and with that in mind, for my second pick, I'm going to go with sort of trusting Vegas over my eye and trusting my board. And I'm going to go with Talis Fuaga from Oregon State. Just because it feels like the NFL really likes this guy a lot. He's another guy that I've kind of paired with the Raiders a few times. I know the Jets have been connected to him a lot. If they end up not taking Bowers, they may be able to take a guy like Fuaga. This isn't probably where I would have him in terms of like my hierarchy, but it feels like the NFL is really in on this guy. He's an ass kicker. He's really tough and physical. And if you look at the over-under, Ben, what is it at right now? The last I saw was...
It's 12 and a half.
12 and a half.
So. There's 12 and a half and 13 and a half, yeah. Which he just like... The thing is like the ceiling for Fuaga is 5. Like I would not be surprised if the Chargers are just like, he plays right tackle and he moves people in the running game. Ah! Like, you know, he could legit go that high. So it's a very high ceiling.
That's why I wanted... That's exactly why I wanted Latham.
If I didn't take Bowers, I was going to take Fuaga at my last pick.
So he was 12th on my board and partly inspired by that Vegas line. Ben, how do you feel about that? with him being potentially the number one lineman off the board or the next tackle after Joe Alt off the board compared to some of these other guys who might be available in this range?
It's the sort of thing where, like, from a talent perspective, like, you know, how good the player is, I get how you get there because Fuaga's got some, like, really incredible dominant reps. From a value perspective, what do the players do? Like, I want my tackles to be better in pass protection. Like, that's the area I want them to be dominant in. And that's where Fuaga is more liable. Now, he's certainly, like, I think, a solid pass protector, but his success is in the running game. And so I brought up, right, like, the Chargers at 5, oh, everybody expects Jim Harbaugh to be this, like, run-heavy team. If that's the philosophy that Greg Roman's going for, then, like, okay, like, Fuaga makes sense at that value if you really want to be, like, a negative pass team, like a really run-heavy team on neutral scripts. For most teams who are going to want to pass the football, you put a Fuaga up against a J.C. Latham or up against an Olu Fashanu, and just, like, their pass protection reps are better than Fuaga's. And so accordingly, like, Fuaga is really great at what he does, but he's buttered on the wrong side of the bread for what, like, the league typically wants from their tackles, especially the top 15, top 20.
There are two guys that went as top 10 offensive tackles, let's say over the last 5 years, that just, this is pure anecdotally off the dome, that went in the top 10 that I think were labeled more as run blockers than pass blockers coming in. Like, that was their strength. And the two guys I would say that about were Mekhi Becton and Ikem Ekwonu. It's been a mixed bag. If that's what you're chasing with top 10 tackles, recently it has been a mixed bag.
Yeah, I think there are listeners right now who are like, what about Tristan Wirfs? They said that about Tristan Wirfs. You were lied to. Tristan Wirfs, you watch the pass protection, you're like, holy smokes. That's not the exact same sensation you have with Fuaga.
All right, so that's Fuaga at 13 for you, DK. So, Ben, you are up with the 14th pick here. Who are you going with?
I'm taking Olu Fashanu here, the tackle out of Penn State. It's, you know, he's a consolation prize to Fuaga. I do think that, like, just with the amount of teams that need tackles, with the potential for the tackles to go early and, like, the Chargers to start the run, I just would be surprised if we get to the Saints at 14 and Fashanu is still on the board. Like, with just the amount of teams, the Jets at 10 and the Raiders at 13, Saints at 14, the Chargers are there, the Titans are there, the Jets at 10. There's just so many teams that potentially need a tackle, that, like, I have a guy who's been considered a top 10, top 15 pick for the entire process. Certainly J.C. Latham and Fuaga have pushed themselves into this conversation, but I don't think Fashanu is losing ground in terms of how the league views him. I just think that other tackles have joined the fray as, like, guys who are viewed as top 10, top 15. And so I might be getting OT4 here. Like, he went OT4 in our draft. He might be OT4 off the board, but I still think I have a really good shot at getting a top 15 pick with OT4, even more so than, like, you know, going for an edge or going for a corner here. So I'm taking Fashanu.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I think the Saints perspective and using the Saints as a reason that's kind of a safety net is a very good way to think about it. I probably would have gone with him there as well. And the fact that he is gone is very upsetting to me because now I don't know what I'm going to
do. You should have invited worst drafters on for this show, right?
I really should have. My thought process was I wanted just a level of silliness that I knew you guys could bring, but I didn't anticipate that you'd actually be good at this.
We're prepped.
So
that's how we get you. We fool you with the jokes.
I'm sitting here at 15 and 16, and you've scared me with the edge talk. You've scared me with the DJ edge talk. Now you're in my head. So, and then the other, I'm with you on the offensive lineman thinking, and that's why Fontenu is attractive to me here, but I think that there are some rumblings about some medical stuff that I don't feel great about that scare me off a little bit potentially. And the Terry and Arnold is also potentially attractive if we're talking about all those teams that need a corner in this range, and we think about the Jags maybe as the floor for the second corner just based on how the draft might fall. I am gonna go with Fontenu.
That's a good pick
at 15. Because again, I think that there's so many teams that need tackles in this range. I also wouldn't be surprised if a team came up for a tackle in this range.
Oh, for sure.
At all if a team like, I was going to say Denver trades back, but the Sean Payton the Sean Payton of it all makes that harder for me to imagine.
He doesn't have time to trade back. But
I could imagine the Colts trading back from 15 for a team that wants a tackle. I could imagine Seattle absolutely trading back from 16 if a team wants to come up and take a tackle.
Cincinnati at 18 needs a tackle. Pittsburgh at 20 needs a tackle. Miami at 21 needs a tackle. There are all these guys.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm going to go with Fontenu there at 15. And then at 16, I'm going to go with Terrion Arnold for this reason. He's the gap between him and the other corners feels pretty solid. the guys that are still left. I think with the two edge guys, I don't want to pick one or the other because there's a chance one goes in this range and one goes a lot later, and I pick the wrong one here between Latu and Verse. So I don't want to be put in that position, and that's why I'm going to go with Terry and Arnold here. So I'm going to go with Fontenot and Arnold as my two picks.
And what's really nice is that, like I agree with DK. I think Quinion's the first corner off the board. Arnold could very reasonably go with the first corner, and you just grabbed like a top 10 pick super late in the draft, right? And that's the thing is, like, when you, like, corner and edge is a little bit tougher to buy into. Like, we've all been buying tackles, but you might end up with a high ceiling outcome, right? And like, that's the nice thing about potentially winning this. That's why I'm very happy that I got Byron Murphy here to take it at 17.
Whose turn is it?
My turn.
It's Solak's turn. It's Solak is up at 17.
I keep losing track. Yeah, and he's just right in the middle. Yeah.
I'm taking Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle out of Texas. Yeah. Now, 2 months ago when I watched Byron Murphy, I was like, oh my gosh, like, we got it. It's a first round defensive tackle. This guy's the man. Like, he's great. Like, there was so much about Tavondre Sweat and the big nose tackle next to him, but Murphy's the dude, man. Like, he's all that in a bag of chips. As the process has gone, man, it's been like, Murphy's going top 25. Murphy's going before Jerzon Newton. Murphy's going top 20. You've heard reports that some teams have as just the highest graded defensive player in the class, period. DJ said, again, like, referencing that conference call, DJ was asked, hey, a surprise top 10 pick, and he said Byron Murphy. That, like, there's no doubt in my mind that the league has this guy graded very highly, graded as a first rounder, graded as a top 15 player, graded higher relatively to like some of the other dudes who we're talking about as top 15, top 20 picks. The question is fit. The question is landing spot. We've talked a lot about, oh, you know, there are so many offensive tackle teams to go get the offensive tackles. It's a little bit harder to find where Byron Murphy goes because there's just way fewer teams that have defensive tackle needs. But like, I do circle the Falcons, who have a little bit of a question mark there. Like, maybe it's them. I don't know. Altogether, I think I'm getting one. It's like Brock Bowers. I think this guy's good enough that I'm getting one team who comes up to go and get him. And maybe that's at 14, maybe that's at 10, maybe that's at 16, but I do think Murphy's going higher than a lot of people realize. So I was really hoping to get him in this draft. I like where I know,
he was 100% the guy I was going to take there, Ben. I've heard from multiple different people, even before we started hearing Daniel Jeremiah talking about it this week, that he's a top 10 player. I was like, because when I heard that originally, I was like, what? That's kind of crazy because he's a little undersized. You know, there's some question marks there, but you watch him, he's incredibly, incredibly disruptive. He like plays with incredible leverage for his size too. Like, he could take on double teams and you know, just stand his ground. So I think he has that three down potential, and that makes my life a little bit more difficult here. I'm up right two in a row.
Yeah, you have two in a row here at numbers 18 and 19.
Okay, so we have, I think my first pick, and this is probably a risky one, but I think we're getting into that zone where anything could happen. I'm going to take Brian Thomas Jr. This is risky, but I don't know, man. Again, the NFL loves speed, and this is a guy. What's his over-under at Circa?
I think it's like 17 and a half. The last time I saw it.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, this is a guy that the NFL loves. I, you know, it wouldn't honestly surprise me to see him go 12. Like, Jameson Williams a couple of years ago went 12 or 11. Teams love speed. Teams love these game-breaking type talents. I think, yeah. So this one feels a little risky and a little bit high variance, but that's what I'm going to go with right now. Brian Thomas at number 18.
I totally understand that because I think that, again, we talk about Jacksonville at 17 needing a receiver. The Colts, I think you could argue that they still need a receiver, even though it'd be slightly harder for me to imagine them doing that. My only concern with Thomas is if he gets outside of that range, what is the floor? What do you think about that, Ben? Like, what's the latest you could see Thomas going?
So I honestly, I don't think it's that low. I think, like, I look at the Steelers at 20 and I'm like,
okay, yeah, the Steelers at 20 is a good stop point. Yeah.
They don't take a lot of wide receivers in the first round. Last one was Antonio Holmes in 06 because they can just take guys in round three and be like, you're magically good. And so I understand if they pass on him, but here's the thing. I really would want to be the team that drafts Brian Thomas, not just because I like him and I think he's good, but because, man, like, this wide receiver class, like, I know there's a lot of guys graded round two, round three, but when we start talking about Adonai Mitchell in round one, like, no, thank you. That's not for me. Like, I would have a Ladd McConkey, a little too rich for my blood. About Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, like, these, I don't know if I don't have those guys graded where I had like Zay Flowers last year, Jordan Addison last year, Jackson with the Jigba, like the real guys who go in the 20s. To me, Brian Thomas stands alone as like, okay, definitely not tier one, but emphatically tier two, emphatically a first round wide receiver. And there's going to be a team that likes Adonai, a team that likes Troy, whatever. But for me, like if I'm running a team and I know I'm not getting in the top three receivers, I'm really keyed in on trying to make sure I'm the team that gets Brian Thomas instead of rolling the dice at some of those other guys with a round one pick. Thomas is a much more of a sure thing for me.
Yeah, the Steelers at 20 is, I think, a really good point to bring up. I think that probably is like a fail-safe with a guy like that. I want to say that Adonai Mitchell has the same over-under.
So he opened with the same over-under at Circa, right? They both opened at 17.5 at Circa. Thomas remains at 17.5. Adonai moved to like 26.5 on most books.
Okay.
And so,
okay,
yeah, so there a lot of... Adonai's taken a lot of crazy money. I definitely think Adonai's the fifth receiver off the board. Where he goes, ask me after Thursday.
I'm gonna stick with my my strategy here of picking with my heart and then with my head. And my second pick here is gonna be the chalk odds one, and that's Jared Verse out of Florida State. So I could see him going to the Saints at where are they at 14. I could see the Colts liking a guy like him, big, strong, fast man, physical. I could see the Seahawks liking him. I could see the Jaguars liking him. I could see the Bengals liking him. I could see the Rams liking him.
That characterization of the Colts draft strategies, big, strong, fast man, 15th overall pick. Let's do it. That's not wrong.
Get down to brass tacks here. This guy is big. Yeah. He's fast. He's strong.
Yeah. And listen, prove the point is in the end with the young man, Chris Ballard. All right. Just been cooking in some drafts by finding the big, fast, strong ones.
I mean, it's kind of a good man has strategy, a type. Honestly. So yeah, I'm going with Jared Verse.
So that's Jared Verse at 19. Why Verse over Latu? Just because it's the chalk pick?
I'm worried about the injury thing. I think Latu, there's a chance, and honestly, maybe the person who picks Latu might have the best chance of winning because you're getting like that much surplus value. But I think there's a chance he falls out of the first round. Like, there's been talk that the neck injury is a huge concern to some teams. You know, neck injury is a serious, serious thing, and this is the main reason we see guys who are, you know, very widely regarded as extremely good players fall surprisingly. And so that just worries me. You know, he's the type of guy in this game, probably let someone else pick him.
The last guy I can remember having neck injury issues, because I think Jalen Phillips was a back issue, correct? Before he was coming into the league.
I believe so.
Yeah. I think it's spine. I don't really know how the body works.
So, but the last guy I can remember with a neck injury history specifically before the draft was Leighton Vander Esch, who just retired 5 years into his career because of recurrent neck problems. So I can understand why teams are maybe a little bit scared off from a guy who had to medically retire because of neck issues.
Yeah, I'm taking a lot to it.
Damn it.
I like this.
Nice try, Robert.
I was really trying.
I would be worried. But.
Go big or go home.
All right. So, DK, I thought you were going to take Latu. I know you're a huge personal fan of Latu, and I was hoping to get Verse. I'd be happy to get Verse. I think Verse's range of outcomes is more narrow, right? Latu certainly, I think, gives you it might go earlier. There's been references teams have him round one, or first edge overall. Teams have him with no medical concerns; they feel good about him. And so, the range is way bigger. He could go way later. He could go way earlier. You don't really know what's going to happen with Latu. I definitely want some exposure to the edge draft, right? Robert has Dallas Turner, DK has Jared Verse, I get Latu Latu, and we kind of see how these three guys land, give you a big decider for the draft. But I'll take the variance on Latu and just hope that I get like a median outcome, right? If he ends up going 19 to the Rams, I'm still pleased. It's like that's fine with me. You have the potential to get a lot earlier than that. Yeah, but I still very much believe he's going to be a round one pick. Even if he has the fall, even if he is edge three, even if there are medical concerns, I would be surprised if he makes it all the way out of round one. And so there is some risk, but not too much that I'm scared of it. I'm taking Latu here.
I absolutely would have taken him next. I really wanted him.
Yeah, I was watching you. I don't think Robert's playing.
I'm having buyer's remorse. I already regret this, but yeah.
It's because of what you said. I think that there's a chance he's like that eighth pick in the draft. Like, there's a chance that people just look at the pass rush talent and just say, man, we're fine. He's okay medically on our board. We think he's the best pass rusher in the draft. We're comfortable taking him here. And that's why getting him at 20, which you just did, I was really hoping that he was still going to be there for me, because I do think the upside is kind of crazy in an exercise like this. I don't feel that way about pretty much every other guy that is currently left. I think that was kind of a tier. Now that we have Verse and Latu off the board, I think the guys after this it's harder for me to imagine any of them going like in the top 12. And I think a lot of players that just went, I think you could talk yourself into that. All right. My next pick is going to be A.D. Mitchell.
I think that's a good pick.
I like it.
I just, because of the, in my opinion, maybe a slight drop off to the next tier of receivers based on what he could potentially be, right? Like, even if you like Ladd McConkey, I think there's probably going to be an argument about what Ladd McConkey's ceiling is compared to what a guy with A.D. Mitchell's profile gives you. I could see a team talking themselves into him in this range for that exact reason. Let's say Brian Thomas is gone and the Steelers want that type of guy. Does he go at 20 to the Steelers? Something like that. So I don't feel great about it because I do think the floor is pretty low. I think this is the first guy that we've drafted, maybe outside of Latu for medical concerns, that you could see maybe going outside of the first round. And that scares me a little bit. But I also think that he has a higher ceiling than some of the other guys below him on this list. DK, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a high variance player and he's a high variance pick in this game because I think you're right. There's a chance people are get scared off by his lack of, you know, relative production based on if you look at his production and then you look at all the other round one receivers of the past decade, it's like he is by far the lowest in terms of his like both counting stats and per play stats. And so it's scary. That being said, you know, he moves differently. He was one of the most athletic receivers of all time at the combine. He's got that dog in him kind of player. Like he wants the football in those big situations. He scored touchdowns in key moments in big game, in national championship games or, you know, playoff games. And so I could absolutely see a team falling in love with him. Maybe this will make you feel better. I heard Adam Schefter, I believe it was on the Established Run podcast a couple of days ago, say A.D. Mitchell is going to go higher than people think. So there is that.
If A.D. Mitchell went higher,
I was
going to
have
think.
Him high on my list of the next guy to pick because
yeah, he was on my short list for my next pick as well.
But it is a little scary. I agree.
All right. So I got A.D. Mitchell at 21. At 22, I'm choosing between two offensive linemen.
Oh, I have one offensive lineman that I'm absolutely taking at my next pick if he's there, and I have another, and I have nobody else, like no other offensive lineman.
Actually, I have two.
Look into my eyes, Robert.
Don't
read
do
my
it.
Poker face.
I'm fully willing to admit that this may be a byproduct of podcasting thrice weekly with Nate Tice over the last 2 months.
I know exactly
dang
who
it
is.
Dang it.
I'm taking Graham Barton at 21.
Great pick.
I think Graham Barton could go really early. I think there's a chance Graham Barton goes in the first 14 picks, and I just got him at 21 here. But I just think that the floor-ceiling combination in terms of set of outcomes for him makes me feel a little bit better about him at this spot than somebody like Amarius Mims, who obviously the ceiling is crazy, but if you don't feel like he can play right away, you think there's enough question marks. So I'm going to go with Graham Barton from Duke at 22 here with my second pick.
Yeah, I think that's a lights out pick. I think Barton's probably the best like true interior player, the offensive lineman that's in this class. And obviously he played tackle and guys like Troy Fontenot and Talese Fuaga did play tackle and also might move in. But like Barton's viewed universally kind of as an interior guy. And he has unbelievable testing. He's unbelievable film. He can play tackle in a pinch. This is just the dream, like good team gets offensive linemen who will be on the team for the next 10 years. Dolphins, Packers, like Eagles, like he's a lights out prospect.
All right. So let's take that a step further. Let's say you're teams that view Fontenot and or Fuaga as guards. And you think that they are best moving inside in the league. You think there's a team that looks at those three and decides that Barton is their best bet of those three?
Yeah.
That's kind of my thought too. That's why I'm trying. That's the bet I'm hoping to make here.
Now, it's always tricky because like we talk a lot about moving guys to guard from tackle. And oftentimes like, oh, it's an arm length thing. But there's also like a, you know, how do they do with like, you know, having a naked shoulder, right? They have no tight end next to them. They have to worry about that high side outside rush. If they're not good on that, which I would argue Fuaga, that's where he's a little bit weak, then oh, kick him to guard and then you have to worry about that. And so guys will move to guards for different reasons. And accordingly, different body types will end up at guard. So like, again, if you're like a road grading team, Fuaga at guard sounds like electric, like boogie, woogie, woogie. Let's do it. If you are a team that's trying to pull guards and run screens and zone movement, now you're in the Fontenot realm, right? That's the guy you want at guard. Fuaga at guard wouldn't make sense for you. And so it also is team specific.
Yeah, the guy that the comparison that Duke Manyweather made in this process and with Fuaga specifically was Mike Iupati. And if you think back to what Harbaugh did with drafting Iupati back in 2010,
I like that.
Guy who was a little stiff, had a ton of power. They moved him inside to guard and profit. And so if that's the same thought process with Fuaga, is a guy like Graham Barton and him maybe closer in this process than maybe we're thinking here at first glance? All right. So that's 22. Ben, you are up at 23.
Yeah, so I really wanted Graham Barton. I really like the floor on Graham Barton, and I think the ceiling is decently there. I will be taking Cooper DeJean, the corner out of Iowa. I really like the floor on DeJean. I think the ceiling's a little bit lower than it is with Barton. I don't think DeJean's likely to be getting up there in the top 15. We could see Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell fall a little bit, and that just really puts a cap on how early DeJean can go. With that said, the over-under right now for him is set at 22.5. I do think he's a great fit for the Eagles there at 22.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah, that 22.5, very telling for someone like you.
Right. I do think the Rams are potential there at 19. I think he met with the Seahawks who are picking at 16, Jags at 17. Like, there is potential there. And then you look at the Packers at 25. If DeJean makes it down there, then Iowa first round defensive player who can fit their safety needs and solve some of their outside corner concerns. Like, it's such a freaking, he's such a good athlete. It's like an ideal size. It's a Packer through and through. And so I'm really confident in the floor I've got with DeJean. I'd be stunned if he gets out of round one. A little bit of Brian Thomas theory here, where DeJean, I think, is like definitely like, okay, round one corner. There's question marks about Nate Wiggins because of size, question marks about Kool-Aid McKinstry because of health. I if I'm a team that needs corner at the end of round one, I want to be getting DeJean because I don't want to have to kind of riddle out the next guys down the ladder. And so really confident in the floor in DeJean. Happy to get him on the squad. Good pick with Graham Barton, though.
I'm with you on DeJean. That was my exact thought process about why I was going to take him next, because I think with a couple of the other corners, there are more questions about how far they could fall. With DeJean, it just seems like that stretch from 21 to 25, one of those teams is going to feel good about it because there's a lot of needs that line up with him.
I'm going to go...
This is pick 25 or 24. Ben just got DeJean at 23.
I'm going to go with Johnny Newton, defensive tackle out of Illinois. This
shit. I thought he was going to be around later.
This
That's
might
upsetting.
Be another risky one because I think there was some chatter yesterday that he might not be a first round pick, which I think is kind of ludicrous. I know, so like maybe you're not quite as high on him, I think, as I am, but
I really like his film. Now, when he opened up betting wise, I took a lot of like Newton to go first round. Recent developments are greatly concerning for Ben Solak's investment portfolio in the first round of the NFL draft. There really seems to be like legit smoke that like teams like him, but they don't feel like they need to go get him in round one, which
if we're looking at the original Circa over unders for his draft position that came out the other day, like this is a huge value for me. He's 18.5 over under originally. I don't know where he is now.
Yeah. He went all the way up to 32.5, and then he settled back down at like 29, I want to say.
But again, the way I'm looking at like the meat of the 10s in the early 20s, it's like all these teams I could see take a defensive tackle, like a disruptive defensive tackle. You know, the Raiders, the Saints, the Colts, the Seahawks, the Jags, even the Bengals and Rams, you know, the Dolphins need one. The Eagles are always stacking up on defensive linemen. You know, so I think there's a lot of opportunities for him to go in that area. So I guess that's where I'm going to go with him on this one, even though I think he is another high variance type player. I don't know, man. He's another type of guy. It's like you watch him. He's just so violent with his hands. He's just such a powerful, explosive, tone-setting type defensive tackle. I just really like him.
I mean, would you be surprised at all if San Francisco drafted him at 31?
Oh,
now that
absolutely.
Eric Armstead's out of there.
Yeah.
Like it just seems like a bunch of teams in that range might just say, this is the best defensive player that's still available. This is the most disruptive defensive player that is still available in the draft, and that's why we're going to take him here. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's I was going to draft him maybe with my next pick because that was kind of my thought process. So I'm a little upset about this.
And all right, that brings me to the next pick, which is another tough one, I think, because there's a lot of variance with all these guys. I'm going to go with Amarius Mims for Georgia. He hasn't been taken, correct?
He has not been. That's the guy. I was between him and Barton for my offensive line pick back there.
This is another guy who, you know, it wouldn't really be that surprising to see him go in the early teens just because of his physical traits. You know, he only has 8 starts, I believe, on his resume, which is, of course, a red flag. But when you watch him, it doesn't really feel like this is a guy who has no experience. The way he moves, the way he uses his length, the way he uses his hands and resets and stays balanced and stays, you know, like locked up with the guy. And to me, there's a lot to like here. And I think the only thing that's scaring people away is just the fact that he hasn't played a lot of football. Otherwise, he's a pretty clean prospect, at least from, you know, what I've seen on tape. Obviously, none of these offensive tackles coming out of college are like perfect. But size, athleticism off the charts, you know, strong hands, the upside is astronomical with this guy. And if we're talking about surprise early picks, it wouldn't be shocking that he jumped some of these other tackles.
I think that makes total sense. I actually think he has probably a higher ceiling than a lot of the other guys that were taken in this range. I don't know how you feel about that, Ben.
Oh, yeah. I would take Amarius Mims to the top 10 pick. And that, again, that's why I don't run a team. But I watched him move for like six plays, and I was like, get him on my squad. Yeah. 340, he can fly. He's got, like, you know, Velociraptor or Pterodactyl
not
arms. He's unbelievable. He's so
not Velociraptor.
Yeah, Pterodactyl. I know my dinosaurs.
The phrase that Dane used that I think is very accurate and I think very incisive about Amarius Mims is he's not raw, he's just inexperienced. And that gap and the difference between those two terms I think is really important, especially when you compare him to some of the other tackles who might go in this range or a little bit later.
It's DeJuan Jones theorem. We're like, oh, DeJuan Jones, he isn't good at pass protection. He goes around four. And it's like, oh, it turns out 6'8", 340 is just hard to get around. Fundamentally, it's just difficult to get around the dude. And so you draft Amarius Mims, like, oh, he's inexperienced. Yeah, if you put him out there, like, guys can't get past him. And that's kind of fundamentally what playing tackle is.
All right, so that was the 26th pick. You went with Amarius Mims. I am going to go with
you don't
Tyler.
Get the pick. You don't get the pick, son.
Solak
gets
DK? Sandwiched in, yeah. I hear.
No. Yeah, DK just made two picks. It's me.
Back to Solak.
Oh, who are you picking?
I was going to pick Tyler Guyton, but now I feel bad.
Damn it. It's all right. You can pick Tyler Guyton. Sorry, I screwed up. I thought you picked Mims because your love fest for him. That's why I got confused.
I'm between two guys. I was going to take Guyton, though.
That's fair. I believe you. I trust you. You're a man of your word.
Yeah. Guyton, I think that there's a, this developmental tackle group, I think, is topped by Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton. And then you get into like the Kingsley Suamatia and the Jordan Morgans of the world. But I think Guyton's at that top tier with Mims. I personally like Mims more. I think a lot of people online like Mims more. But Guyton's kind of been, you know, you look at the big mock drafts, like the Mel Kuypers and the Daniel Jeremiah's, Lance Orleans, like he's been in the round one for like all of these guys in every single time. Like it really just feels like the league wants him as the developmental tackle. They want him as the late round one tackle. And so I definitely feel like everybody we're picking at this point now is like, oh, maybe he ends up in the top of round two. I certainly think that's in the range of outcomes for Guyton, but I do think a pick in the 20s is also possible. So I am taking Guyton here.
I think it also lines up with teams that need tackles in this range.
Oh, there's looking so many.
Baltimore, San Francisco, Kansas City, Green Bay even, you know, potentially. Dallas, I think you could argue that they need a tackle if they wanted to keep Tyler Smith at guard. So I think there's so many teams that need them in this range. If he's the last one left, it's hard for me to imagine him getting out of the first round. All right, so am I up now?
Yeah.
After now giving away my pick and liking none of the guys who are left?
These are your last two picks here.
Yeah, I don't like this at all.
This is where it gets weird. Right. Strategically, are you trying to get a guy that maybe go like top 15, like just shoot for the stars?
But who would that even be in this group? That's my question. Because the guy that I wouldn't have been surprised to see him go earlier than we might expect because of some positional scarcity was Johnny Newton. That's why I wanted Johnny Newton, because I feel like, oh man, all right, let the Seahawks take him at 17 because Byron Murphy's off the board. Or 18? Would anybody be surprised? Wherever the Seahawks are picking, the Seahawks take him wherever they're picking. Would we have been shocked? My answer would have been no. So that's why I was intrigued by him in this range, because I thought that he might have had a little higher ceiling than some of these other guys. I don't want to, because I'm really scared by him, just his profile. I'm gonna go with Chop Robinson.
I would have. That's who I was hoping would fall, honestly, because that's exactly who I was thinking in my head who could go higher than maybe people think.
Chop
Pass
Robinson,
rush juice.
FanDuel right now, he's minus 600 to go first round, right? Like he's like, okay. He's like incomplete and he's not one of the top three, but like he's just gonna go. Like he's an edge rusher.
So that was kind of my thought. That's why
Felix
I wanted to go with him.
Uzoma got in the first round last year, dude. Like there's room for Chop.
Very, very good point. So that's why I wanted to go with him, just because I think that teams always need pass rushers. It wouldn't be hard to imagine one of those teams in the back half of the first round picking him off. With the corners, that's scarier to me. I don't necessarily feel the same way about that group of guys, but I don't know if there's any other better options than the corners who are still left here. So I'm going to go with Nate Wiggins as my next one. I don't feel good about it. I think there are a bunch of different ways that you could go here. Jackson Powers Johnson is intriguing, but there's some, again, some medical stuff with him potentially. So maybe he falls a little bit. So I'm going to go with Nate Wiggins just because I do think that there are a lot of teams in this range that still need a corner. Arizona could pick a corner. Baltimore could pick a corner. The Niners could pick a corner. The Chiefs could pick a corner. The problem is I might have picked the wrong one, and then I would be screwed. But I think among all of the options left, I'm going to go with Wiggins here at pick number 28.
Those are the good fundamental picks. Those are the chalky like over-unders. Those guys are both 26 and a half. Like, the expectation is that they go round one. Those are the right picks.
I'm not excited about it, though. For whatever reason, they're both leaving me a little cold. We're at that range now. Right, there's no one left that's like overly exciting. I think that Johnny Newton was the last one that I would have gotten juiced up about. All right, so like, you're up at 29.
I really want to take Kool-Aid McKinstry here. However, there's just been a decent amount of recent... there's medical concerns, there's health problems. Like, you've seen Wiggins overtake him on draft odds and on a lot of draft boards. Jones' fracture in his right foot was found at the combine, is what people say. And so I'm a little bit scared off of McKinstry early. Accordingly, I'm going Darius Robinson, who's the defensive tackle, edge rusher.
That's a spicy one. I like that. Yeah.
So Robinson's an attendee of the draft, right? 13 guys who are going. He's
that's
one
smart.
Of them. Which,
damn it.
I like using that as a signal. I like that a lot.
Now, is that, like, he's a Detroit guy, and so, like, it's a little bit like a homecoming and whatever. Like, that's not a super real thing. I do think that, like, you've seen, like, I know Todd McShay's been really big since the Senior Bowl, saying, like, teams love this guy. I'm getting top 20 feedback. I expect him to be a round one pick. Like, it's not just, like, a recent surge for him. His Senior Bowl was dominant. Robinson's a little bit of a hard guy to pick because finding the team for him is weird because he's, like, 285. Is he a defensive tackle? Is he an edge? How does he fit on the Lions? How does he fit on the 49ers? So, like, it's hard for me to tell you the team he's going to. I do think that with the smoke that he's gotten, with the he does have a little bit of, like, a unique role. There's not a lot of, like, big ends, you know, penetration defensive tackles in this group. With him being at the draft, I will take Robinson. I think I'm costing a little bit on floor. I could see, like, Darius Robinson getting picked in the 40s and hurting me. But I also do think
that,
like,
that could potentially torpedo you. This is the first one where, like, the floor, I think, is very much in play.
Which, I really like my picks 1 through 9, and so I should have just taken a guy who I feel like is, like, super mid and gonna go at, like, 36 overall and feel like, Brock Bowers and Olufoshana are gonna carry me to victory. But Darius Robinson's going to the draft, man. They're not gonna let the guy hang out for too long. I'm taking the Mizzou kid.
Tell that to Will Levis.
Well, he was glad to think second pick in the first, I think, second round or first, whatever.
Yeah. All right, 33. I'll take 33 for Darius Robinson. That's good business.
Oh, man.
All right.
Dude, this DK, is a tough one.
You finish us off here, buddy.
Like, what you were just saying to Solak makes me so scared to make this pick. Kool-Aid McKinstry is another guy that I would have considered here, but I'm going to go for the gusto and just say F it, because the same reason I picked Brian Thomas earlier, sex sells, the NFL loves speed, Xavier Worthy.
That's what I thought you were going to do.
Really think he should go in the first round, if I'm being totally honest, but I feel like he's gonna because of what he did at the combine. 4.21. Obviously, he has a good production profile from early in his career. He's a guy that's been around for a while. His name is very familiar to a lot of scouts and GMs because he's been producing for a long time. If you look at the list of teams like that have been connected to him in terms of interest, like the Chiefs are there, like 32. Would not be super surprising to see the Chiefs grab him at 32 if they do end up picking at that spot. So, God, this is scary, but I'm going to go with Xavier Worthy.
I like that because it only takes one, right? It only takes one team to take him in the top 20 because they're like, there's no other receivers that we like.
Zay Flowers went. Well, where did Zay Flowers go last year? It was like 20-something or 19 or... Yeah.
22.
Yeah.
Right.
22. Yeah. The four receivers went in a row. So there's no way of knowing who went 20 to 23. They all went.
I think
the same
well Johnson, yeah. Johnson was the first one. I think it was 21. And then Zay at 22. Yeah, and I think Jordan Addison was 23.
Yeah. And Smith and Jigba was 20. Yeah. Yeah.
Xavier
Worthy. Yeah. Xavier Worthy on FanDuel right now, -195 to go in the first round. Right.
Like, yeah. It's that's like, pretty good, man. Yeah.
Which,
that's
like,
pretty good.
The only player above him on that book is Kool Aid at -230. Right. Everybody above him was already.
He scared me with the Jones fracture stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I Kool-Aid's weird, man. Kool-Aid is a real, like, it only takes one, right? One team's a clear medical, and they're like him, and go, yeah.
I'm just saying that I'm pretty pissed off that DK is weak-willed and was swayed by the injury fear, and Solak couldn't be on Latu. It's really frustrating.
Don't worry about it. I'm all over it. Stick to your board, all right? Stick to your guns. I do the scouting work.
I do not want the guy
season.
Who falls to the fourth round because he's got some crazy injury. You know, that's what I'm trying to avoid here.
I understand that. All right, this is going to be very fun. We will put these. I should have been paying attention to what the entire list was on the way and writing them down. Guess what?
I wasn't. I've got the three teams if you want them.
Oh yeah, let's do it. List them off right. As you do this while I host the show.
Yeah. So Robert, presumed host of the show, has Drake May, Marvin Harrison Jr., Dallas Turner, J.C. Latham, Troy Fontenot, Terrion Arnold, A.D. Mitchell, Graham Barton, Chop Robinson, and Nate Wiggins. I have Jaden Daniels, McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy. I was thinking Mike, and I was like, well, how did I take him? J.J. McCarthy, Joe Alt,
I think
Brock
you would
Bowers.
Lose if you took Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. Brock Bowers, Olu Fashanu, Byron Murphy, Latu Latu, Cooper DeJean, Tyler Guyton, Darius Robinson. D.K. ended with Caleb Williams, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, Quinyon Mitchell, Talese Fuaga, Brian Thomas, Jared Verse, Amarius Mims, Jerzon Newton, and Xavier Worthy.
I think DK wins. When it's all said and done, I think DK ends up winning.
I like my list. I'm really happy with how my board came out. I'm feeling good. I'm going to look like an idiot in a week.
The idea of me doing this with two guys who have been studying the draft and specializing in the draft for the last several months was a terrible idea. But guess what? The worst thing that can happen here is that I have to buy you guys dinner. And that's totally fine with me. That is totally fine with me. All right, gentlemen. Sincerely appreciate you joining me to do this. Let the people know what you guys have got on tap, because I know there's a lot of fun stuff coming their way from The Ringer.
Yeah, we can check out The Ringer's NFL Draft Guide, which has my rankings. It has Solak's charting of all the quarterbacks, which is extremely, extremely illuminating and a must read. We have a bunch of team needs, basically everything you need at the Ringer Draft Guide. And then also check us out on the Ringer NFL Draft Show.
Yeah, we got pods coming out. We got a live show in Detroit. So if you're in Detroit and you don't want to hang out with Robert and Nate, are you guys doing a live show or are you just doing
it's not a live show, okay. That people can attend. We will be doing the show live and they can watch it on YouTube, unfortunately.
Yeah. So if you're in Detroit because you thought it was and it turns out it's not,
you can watch their show on your phone during our show if you want.
Your show's on Wednesday night, isn't it?
So it's perfect.
Ours is on Thursday. So you should go to the Ringer live show on Wednesday night and then you should watch our show on YouTube on Thursday and Friday.
It's like we planned it.
Guys, sincerely thank you for doing this, even though Ben compared me to Danny Heifetz and then said the Bears are going to win a Super Bowl with Caleb Williams.
Danny Heifetz is a great guy. I would be honored to be comped to Danny Heifetz. Maybe
will never
not in terms of pronunciation, but on other things.
I will never forgive you for either one of those. As we alluded to, we will be doing a live draft show during the first and second nights of the draft on YouTube. Me, Dane, Nate. Every single pick, reactions to all of them, breakdowns. We got some fun bells and whistles coming your way. We got some fun guests coming your way. It's going to be a really great couple days. So please come and join us for that. We will be back on Tuesday with Diana Rossini. We're going to talk a little draft scuttlebutt in the couple days before the draft, what she's hearing, what's going on. So please come back and check that out. For now, that's all we got. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.